It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Happy Monday, folks. Matt Barber in today for Sandy Rios. You are listening to Sandy Rios in the Morning. Great to be with you. I am co-founder and general counsel of Christian Civil Rights Watch. Encourage you to visit our website at truecivilrights.org, truecivilrights.org. We are restoring Christian civil rights, and this is the civil rights struggle of our time. And with the secular left and cultural Marxists and church-state separatists and just your otherwise liberal-slash-progressives attempting to erode and really eliminate our Christian civil rights, we ask the question, who watches them? And that's exactly what we do. So check out our website. Well, a crazy couple weeks in the news. And it just the hits keep on coming. Today, the big it's summit fever, right, in Helsinki with President Trump having met and meeting with the president of Russia, Vladimir Putin, and getting together. Of course, the Democratic grandstanding is nothing new. We see them Mueller and Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General, there with their big pomp and circumstance, their big press conference on Friday announcing yet again 12 more unenforceable, really worthless indictments of Russian citizens that are never going to be extradited, that are never going to be prosecuted. So the evidence will never have to see the light of day or lack thereof. The indictment is heavy on rhetoric and light on evidence and facts. And so the timing of it, of course, not just suspect, clearly showing the political nature of Robert Mueller's witch hunt, as President Trump calls it. And, you know, everyone said, oh, well, then they found the witches. There's 12 witches, something glaring that Alan Dershowitz and others are pointing out there. Notice what's not in the indictment. And Rod Rosenstein acknowledged no evidence of any collusion, any Russian collusion, right? Isn't that what this is all about the Trump campaign and perhaps President Trump himself having super secret meetings with Vladimir Putin and trying to undermine Hillary Clinton and get elected and, you know, Putin's stooge, as the left. Well, once again, exactly zero evidence of any collusion whatsoever to date. How many indictments of American citizens have there been related to so-called Russian collusion? A big fat goose egg. Zero. Exactly zero indictments. And besides all of this, folks, I'm just getting sick and tired of hearing the left stomp their feet, froth at the mouth, jump up and down about Russian interference and meddling in our election. Yeah, it happened. Yeah, it happens. It happens all the time. And guess what? The United States does exactly the same thing. I'm not saying that this excuses what Russia has been doing, but how soon we forget. Back in 2016, 2015 and 2016, President Obama overtly interfering, meddling in, and using American taxpayer dollars to do so, trying to unseat Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel. How soon we forget that he was over there, hired a group, an NGO, to go over there, boots on the ground in Israel, to try to get anybody but Benjamin Netanyahu elected. Spent $500,000 or more. The campaign was known as V15. As in Victory 2015, and it's again, its aim was to elect anybody but Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Yet we hear crickets from anybody on the left related to that. So the meeting today in the news, I'll let everyone else parse that. I'm just frankly not that excited about it myself. I mean, I know it needs to happen. Yes, I hope President Trump confronts Vladimir Putin, and like that's what everyone's demanding. But again, the timing to on Friday to do these indictments clearly by Mueller and Rosenstein to undermine this summit, to undermine this meeting, to give Democrats a political hammer now to say, oh, we need to call the meeting off. You've got to call the meeting off. Now we have 12 more indictments of Russian citizens. We found the witches. It's so political. It's so disgusting. And it just betrays Robert Mueller for what we've been saying all along, that he is a partisan hack, that this is a witch hunt. He's trying to, it's a soft coup with him doing everything he can in colluding with Rod Rosenstein to try to unseat a sitting president. I just don't think it's going to work. I just don't think it's going to happen. So in other news, of course, and one of the big stories, particularly as it relates to Christian civil rights, as it relates to religious freedoms and religious liberties, as it relates to the sanctity of human life and to natural, legitimate man-woman marriage between a man and a woman, the news continues to be Brett Kavanaugh nominated by President Trump to fill the soon-to-be vacant seat of Anthony Kennedy on the United States Supreme Court. And so I want to focus today talking a little bit about Brett Kavanaugh. I know that there are reservations. I am cautiously optimistic about this nominee, and I want to get into why. There are a lot of concerns about some of the things that he has said in the past related to Roe v. Wade, related to abortion, and his role as a D.C. Court of Appeals judge when he was going through the confirmation process, what his personal opinion, for instance, of Roe v. Wade was, something that he has not shared and refuses to share, and well, he should refuse to share where he personally stands. It has nothing to do, nor should it have anything to do with his judicial philosophy as a textualist, as an originalist who is going to interpret the Constitution as it was intended. And as Justice Scalia famously said at one point in time, and I'm paraphrasing, that sometimes for a good judge, a good justice, you're going to arrive based on the law, based on the Constitution, you're going to arrive at decisions that you may personally disagree with. But in the case of Roe v. Wade, I don't think that's necessary. Back in October, it wasn't October, it was years ago, actually, when Brett Kavanaugh was going before the Senate Judiciary Committee and was being grilled on his position on Roe v. Wade as he was being appointed to the D.C. Court of Appeals. Senator Chuckie Schumer, good old Chuckie, he said, "Do you consider Roe v. Wade to be an abomination?" Okay, that's not a loaded question. Of course, we together, we may say, well, yeah, it's horrible. 60 million dead babies later. It's the second Holocaust. It's an American Holocaust. There's no question about it. But Brett Kavanaugh, he answered this way. He said, "If confirmed to the D.C. Circuit, I would follow Roe v. Wade faithfully and fully. That would be binding precedent of the court. It's been decided by the Supreme Court." Now, here's where I want to kind of unpack this a little bit. We need to, our friends at the American Family Association, American Family Radio, this gives pause. I mean, there's no question about it. Anybody reading this, it would say, whoa, faithfully and fully follow Roe v. Wade. What the heck? You know, that's one of the worst decisions. It's like Dred Scott. That's a decision that if any Supreme Court decision needs to be overturned, it's Roe v. Wade. Well, I want to point out here, I don't think that Brett Kavanaugh necessarily would agree with that. We have to look at everything here in context. All of this is in the context of Brett Kavanaugh sitting as a judge on the D.C. Court of Appeals. This is a lower court below the Supreme Court. His role as a judge, he is required, he is mandated to go by Supreme Court precedent. That's what he is actually, that's his job, to look at Supreme Court precedent in making his judgments and apply that. He has no choice. And in fact, if Brett Kavanaugh, as a D.C. Court of Appeals judge, were to ignore Roe v. Wade and say, well, Roe v. Wade was wrongly decided, it's unconstitutional, it's time to overturn Roe v. Wade, he would be overturned immediately. The Supreme Court, ostensibly under its configuration at the time, and with the five liberals, because I call Kennedy, he was a liberal. I mean, I'm sorry. He voted, you know, he was the deciding vote that crammed through so-called gay marriage. He in 92, in the Casey decision, he was actually prepared to vote down Roe v. Wade. Somebody got to him somehow in midstream. He switched his decision, his vote, and this horrific Holocaust continues to this day because of Justice Anthony Kennedy. So Brett Kavanaugh, he has no choice but to view and rule through the prism of Supreme Court precedent. So nothing he said here, he said that would be binding precedent of the court. It's been decided by the Supreme Court. Those are simply factual statements. That's a fact. He also said in the Garza decision, Brett Kavanaugh wrote, in some, and this is a decision that was rightly decided. He voted in a dissent that, and the dissent was correct, that a teenaged illegal alien, did not have a right to U.S. taxpayer funded abortion. He said, in some, under the government's arguments in this case and the Supreme Court's precedents, the unlawful immigrant minor is assumed to have a right under precedent to an abortion. Now, I want to talk a little bit. What does he mean when he says is assumed? Everything here, again, if on its face, it looks troubling if you happen to be someone like myself who is adamantly opposed and believes wholeheartedly that Roe v. Wade was illegitimate, it needs to be overturned. He said, under the government's arguments, that's true. In this case, in the Supreme Court precedents, that's true. The unlawful immigrant minor is assumed to have a right under precedent to an abortion. Notice he says assumed. To me, I'm going to read something into that. Assumed to have a right. Well, yeah, that's under the U.S. precedent, under Roe v. Wade and Casey, the minor is assumed to have a right to an abortion, to have a so-called phantom constitutional right for a mother to go in and have her child dismembered alive. Can you believe we're even having this conversation? But 45 years of this shameful decision and the blood money of Planned Parenthood in enriching itself on literally on selling baby body parts, as we know, through various sting operations and with our friend David DeLaden and others having exposed Roe v. Wade. We know what a blight Roe v. Wade has been on America and on American history, and it needs to go, no question about it. After the break, I want to get into why I think Brett Kavanaugh is the fifth deciding vote to overturn Roe v. Wade. I want to break that down. He gave a speech just last year in which he talked about the dissent of Rehnquist's dissent in Roe v. Wade and Casey, and that he agreed with that dissent. So stick around, Matt Barber, in for Sandy Rios. Don't go away.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for a healthcare plan, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2.5 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings may be less or more, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. Just hit *345. That's *345. *345.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've seen God open up so many doors for us to help serve and love those who get affected by a natural disaster.
As the trees and the wind started crashing down around us, my wife was, of course, very diligently praying, you know, Lord, please be with us.
Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others.
I see these volunteers all as a gift from God.
And I'm just grateful they're here, you know, helping out. It's a blessing.
If you're interested in becoming a part of what God's doing through 8 Days of Hope, please go to 8daysofhope.com, click on Get Involved, submit your email address.
I've noticed that whenever there's a time in my life when things might be a little gloomy, the number one thing that I can do is to go serve somebody.
And I would encourage anyone else to, it's worth it. Come out and do it next time if you didn't make it to this one. And the Father will really bless you in it.
Thank you so much for your prayers and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Pro-life pregnancy care centers were required under California law to notify patients that the state offered subsidized abortions. It was a clear violation of the First Amendment, and the Supreme Court agreed, ruling 5-4 in a major victory that blocked the state from enforcing the law. It also affirmed Americans are legally protected from compelled speech by their government. Tony Perkins is the president of the Family Research Council. He said all Americans should be breathing a sigh of relief. He said California lawmakers wanted to punish faith-based organizations that did not capitulate to the government's value system. Imagine having to promote a message that runs counter to your mission. A vegan grocer forced to post ads for the local meat market. Clearly unfair, and it's equally unfair to force organizations dedicated to protecting the unborn to promote programs that are designed to kill the unborn. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
And we're back. Thanks for listening in, folks. Matt Barber in today for Sandy Rios. Talking about Brett Kavanaugh, President Trump's pick to replace Justice Anthony Kennedy on the United States Supreme Court. Is he going to be that fifth vote to overturn the infamous Roe v. Wade decision? Is he going to be the fifth vote to overturn the more recent and absurd and illegitimate Obergefell decision that somehow divined a so-called right for Patrick Henry to marry Henry Patrick, something that our founding fathers could have never even conceptualized, much less felt was it some kind of constitutional right that the court would just willy-nilly, arbitrarily redefine the God-designed institution of man-woman marriage. I'm cautiously optimistic. I know there are concerns. Some of we talked about in the last segment, some of the things that judge on the D.C. Court of Appeals and during his confirmation to that position that a Judge Kavanaugh said basically that in his position, he would be compelled to recognize that Roe v. Wade is currently court precedent. But here's where things change. Here's where I'm hoping I can give you a little bit of and here's why I'm cautiously optimistic. The role of a Supreme Court justice is an entirely different role. It has nothing to do with the lower court position. His position as a lower court judge, he's mandated, required to acknowledge and that precedent that Roe v. Wade is binding to him as a lower court judge. Guess what? As a Supreme Court justice, it's not. He is now, the context has changed. His role has changed. He is now in a position to apply the law as it was intended, as he has said over and again, and has, as his 300 some odd plus decisions prove and bear out, Judge Kavanaugh is an originalist. He is a textualist. There is no originalist or textualist on the planet that as a Supreme Court justice would uphold Roe v. Wade. It's simply not going to happen. And, you know, it's good also to look to people who know Judge Kavanaugh. Sarah Pitlick, she's a former law clerk to Judge Kavanaugh and special counsel for the Thomas More Society, our friends at the Thomas More Society, a Christian religious liberties firm, a very pro-life legal group. She says that Kavanaugh has an excellent record and perhaps the best.
Hey, folks, Matt Barber patching back in on a cell phone. Apologies. We had a technical issue where I got kicked out of the system. So I'm going to talk with you on the phone now here for a bit as we're trying to get the technical issues worked out. Talking about Judge Kavanaugh and a potential Justice Kavanaugh in the United States Supreme Court. And as pointed out, one of his former clerks, Sarah Pitlick, has said that he is adamantly pro-life and will be probably the most pro-life of any of President Trump's potential picks to replace Justice Anthony Kennedy on the court. But I want to talk about a speech that Judge Kavanaugh gave last year at the American Enterprise Institute on Constitution Day, where he said that he wholeheartedly agreed with the Rehnquist dissent in Roe v. Wade, and that it was that his dissent was properly argued and held. And here's the key phrase here. In talking about Roe v. Wade and Justice Rehnquist dissent, he said, but he, meaning Justice Rehnquist, was successful in stemming the general tide of freewheeling judicial creation of unenumerated rights that were not rooted in the nation's history and tradition. So he talked about the Roe v. Wade decision as being a judicial creation. He called it freewheeling. He said that it was a general tide of freewheeling judicial creation of unenumerated rights, and he said that in order for new rights to be created, unenumerated rights, he talked at length about the import, how important it was that that there be a deep rooting in tradition and history, and pointed out that clearly with Roe v. Wade and later the Casey decision, there was not such a history, not such a tradition. And so Judge Kavanaugh agreed. He praised Rehnquist's decision in that bench. And that speech was called From the Bench, the Constitutional Statesmanship of Chief Justice William Rehnquist. And he went on. He said while he was at Yale Law School, Judge Kavanaugh, he made some notes to himself about some assigned reading. He said, agree with Rehnquist majority opinion. Agree with Rehnquist dissent. Agree with Rehnquist analysis. Rehnquist makes a good point here. Rehnquist destroys the majority reasoning here. In class after class, I stood with Rehnquist. That often meant in the Yale Law School environment of the time that I stood alone. So here we have the most definitive, I think, information about what Judge Kavanaugh and a Justice Kavanaugh, what his position is, what his mind is, when it comes to this newfangled, this phantom creation of a so-called right to abortion. And so I think that that's very important. And we, again, keep that in light of the fact that, that some of the comments that he's made as a judge are a bit troubling in terms of that he would be, that it is binding precedent, that Roe v. Wade is binding precedent, that he would be held to that binding precedent. And but this is to me a good thing, and I believe, and again I'm cautiously optimistic, that he will do the right thing when it comes to Roe v. Wade, because how can he not? He has said that, again, he is called Rehnquist his judicial hero. He's called him his hero, and no one took a firmer dissent against Roe v. Wade than Justice Rehnquist. So, again, we need to be in prayer. The left is absolutely, they're breaking out all the stops in order to try to stop Judge Kavanaugh from moving forward through the nomination process. I think they're going to be ultimately unsuccessful in doing so. And I hope that they are unsuccessful, but they are certainly making an attempt to see that he is not confirmed to the United States Supreme Court. I mean, the stories coming out, you know, Baseball Gate. Oh my goodness, he racked up credit card debt to pay for Nationals games. You know, the one I saw yesterday. I mean, they are digging up every possible thing they can. His friends at Yale Law School said he liked to eat ketchup on his pasta. That was an actual story. That actually came out. These are the things they're finding about Judge Kavanaugh. So we know for sure, for instance, that I think that he has allayed the concerns of Murkowski and Collins, who are the two pro-abortion Republicans who have said that they will not support him if he if they believe that he is going to overturn Roe v. Wade. They seem to be indicating that they're comfortable with President Trump's pick of Judge Kavanaugh to replace Justice Kennedy. We also have a number of red state Democrats that are in very untenable positions right now. They are in a position where they have really may have no choice but to vote to confirm Judge Kavanaugh. I suspect that he will actually get confirmed with a fairly comfortable margin. I'm thinking by 4 or 5 votes, 3 to 5 votes, something like that. And well, he should. I mean, he, again, any judge. We've had disappointments before, you know, with Republican-appointed justices, with Souter, who was a liberal, Breyer, who has voted. Of course, Breyer, I think it was Clinton that appointed Breyer. I don't recall off the top of my head, but we have no doubt about it. We have had judges, justices that have been on the face may as well appear to be. Kennedy was one of them. Appeared to be conservative, but that ended up voting with the liberals time and time again, you know, and were horrible disappointments. Do we know for definitively 100% that Judge Kavanaugh will not turn out that way? I just don't think he will. He's being compared more to Clarence Thomas than he is to Justice Kennedy. I hope that turns out to be the case. I understand American Family Association, they're kind of let's take a wait and see approach. You know, because there have been some things he has said that give you pause, that make you wonder. But I believe, based upon his judicial hero, Rehnquist, I believe that Judge Kavanaugh and Justice Kavanaugh, he said Rehnquist believed that the constitutional principles do not change absent an amendment. That's what he said. Well, guess what? Roe v. Wade did not come to us by way of amendment. Abortion did not come to us by way of amendment. It was judicial fiat that brought Roe v. Wade upon us. So Rehnquist believed that the constitutional principles do not change absent amendment, he said. He also believed that changes to the Constitution and laws are made by the people through the amendment process. So, again, Matt Barber, sorry for the technical difficulties, folks. I don't have the bumper music. Not quite sure how much time we have left here before the break going into the last segment. We're continuing to work on to try to get these difficulties fixed. Hopefully, we'll be up and running again here very shortly. So stick around. We'll be right back after the break.
For just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many, are one body, so it is with Christ. For the body does not consist of one member, but of many. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Look briefly at one of your fingers. You've just witnessed one of the greatest displays of God's creative intent there is. No other person in all the world, even an identical twin, shares your fingerprint. God specifically designed each of us to be unique. That means we shouldn't try to carbon copy anyone else in the Christian faith. If God made you an arm in his body or a kneecap, praise be to our glorious God for drawing us to become a part of his body. How freeing it is to realize that we were never meant to copy anyone but Jesus.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Exposing Washington reveals the deception that plagues our nation's capital.
The mainstream media refuses to tell the truth of what's really happening.
Exposing Washington brings clarity to the news coming out of Washington, D.C.
The American people must stay informed on what our government is doing.
Exposing Washington with Walker Wildman brings you the inside scoop of what's happening at our nation's capital.
We must take our country back.
Each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Is God calling you to pursue theological graduate education? What's keeping you from taking the first step? Is it time? What if you could choose from flexible class options? Is it money? What if competitively priced seminary offered academic scholarships? Do you think you're alone? What if your classmates were just like you, balancing careers and families with seminary? Hello, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Take the first step. Visit wbs.edu.
Netflix continues to ignore the outcry about 13 Reasons Why. The American Family Association, along with Parents Television Council and several other pro-family groups, have reached out to the streaming service urging the cancellation of their program. Netflix has not even responded to our letter. Instead, they released an even more vile Season 2 and are producing Season 3. Netflix CEO Reed Hastings says their program is engaging and that it fosters discussion of taboo topics like suicide and sexual assault. But at what cost? 14-year-old Anna Bright and several other teens have committed suicide after watching the show. Hastings calls our objections propaganda. Does he feel the profitability of his company is worth more than the lives damaged or lost because of his show? Please sign our petition to Netflix, learn more, and share our action alert when you visit afa.net. And pray Reed Hastings will recognize the dangers of 13 Reasons Why.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The meeting between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin today in Helsinki offers an insight into what might be called the Trump Doctrine. The common denominator for Mr. Trump's foreign and trade policies seems to be a determination to isolate and counter communist China. Russia has become a close ally of China. North Korea is Beijing's puppet. Pakistan, Iran, and Venezuela are its clients. The European Union, unlike NATO and many of its members, is hostile to the U.S. and doing deals with the PRC. So, President Trump is working hard to drive wedges between China and the Russians and North Koreans, weakening its regional proxies and challenging our allies for harming U.S. interests and rewarding them when they don't. And he's taking on China directly with trade, investment, and military measures. Here's hoping this is the Trump Doctrine and that it works. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
And welcome back. Well, we have liftoff. We are reconnected through the studio, folks. Had some crazy technical difficulties there. Our apologies. We pulled an audible, and had me on the phone there for a little bit, so we were jumping through all kinds of hoops to try to get you some content here. Matt Barber, again, in for Sandy Rios today, talking about Brett Kavanaugh and his appointment, his nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court. And in the last segment, I pointed out how he spoke last year, just last year, about Chief Justice Rehnquist's at the Enterprise Institute, the American Enterprise Institute, his dissent in the 92 Casey decision, which upheld Roe v. Wade, and that he agreed. He praised that dissent and the logic, the originalist logic behind it. And I believe, based on his writings and his speeches and what he has said, and the fact that he is a textualist, an originalist, I believe that Judge Kavanaugh, a Justice Kavanaugh, would be the fifth vote to overturn Roe v. Wade, at least to chip away at it and make it neuter it effectively, to make it not having any kind of power or effect. But as I've often said, it's not enough to return Roe v. Wade, to return the abortion decision to the states. We need a court, and I believe a 5-4 Trump Supreme Court would hold that people have a right to life, period. The 14th and the 5th Amendments cover people at all stages of development. But another issue that I think we could see bite the dust here is this newfangled notion of counterfeit gay marriage. The Obergefell decision is only a few years old, and it was so wrongheaded, so illegitimate, and even the dissenting judges here, the four conservatives on the court at the time, had scathing dissents of the Kennedy's majority decision here that just pulled out of thin air. No precedent, no history, no tradition, and Judge Kavanaugh has said that for to change something like this and to create an unenumerated right, that those rights, that has to be rooted in history and tradition. Clearly, such was not the case with the Obergefell gay marriage decision. Chief Justice John Roberts, he rightly observed at the time that the activist majority opinion that had hijacked the democratic process. He said this: "Do not celebrate the Constitution. It had nothing to do with it," he said of the Obergefell decision. And Justice Scalia, the late Justice Scalia, he called the ruling a, quote, "threat to democracy." He called it the pretentious and egotistic decision. He said that it, quote, "robs the people of the most important liberty they asserted in the Declaration of Independence and won in the Revolution of 1776, the freedom to govern themselves." I am strongly confident that a Justice Kavanaugh is of that mindset. I believe that as we challenge and as we continue to challenge this shameful Obergefell decision that takes a sexual sin and tries to give government approval to it by calling it so-called marriage, I believe that we will see that eventually overturned in our lifetime. Roe v. Wade, Obergefell, Dred Scott, and others will be in the dustbin of history. And, you know, let's not forget either that at the time there, the justices in the dissent and even in the majority decision, Kennedy, where he has shown some strength in the past, is on religious liberty. And the majority opinion emphasized at the time, 3 years ago in Obergefell, that the so-called right to gay marriage should not be construed to trump religious liberty. Even Kennedy wrote, "Finally, it must be emphasized that religions and those who adhere to religious doctrines may continue to advocate with utmost sincere conviction that by divine precept, same-sex marriage should not be condoned." Well, yeah, that's true. The First Amendment ensures that religious organizations and persons are given proper protection as they seek to teach the principles that are so fulfilling and so central to their lives and faiths, and to their own deep aspirations to continue the family structure they have long revered. The same is true of those who oppose same-sex marriage for other reasons. So, you know, we wondered at the time, what does that look like? Well, we have 3 years hindsight now. We've seen, for instance, with the Masterpiece Cake decision. The court got it right. They could have taken it further. They didn't rule definitively and take it far enough, in my opinion. But Jack Phillips, his right to refuse to use his gifts and his abilities, his refusal to endorse effectively the counterfeit notion of same-sex marriage, that was his right to do that. So we've seen in the context to what that Kennedy, at least in this sense, was a man of his word, needs to be taken further. I believe it will. And, you know, I believe that we will see that effectively the baker, the florist, and we got innkeepers and photographers, just people who are engaged in this industry of this wedding industry, that their rights are going to be protected, that we can't be forced. And these false comparisons between race and sexually deviant behavior, to compare those things is offensive. It's comparing apples to oranges. As my friend, the late Ken Hutcherson, used to say, he was a pastor out in Seattle, a former NFL football player, a big African-American guy. He used to say, don't compare your sin to my skin. And I think that's those are very powerful words. So, you know, under the Kennedy court, with Kennedy as the swing vote, we had to wonder, would Kennedy have an honest reading of the First Amendment? The free exercise clause, it means that Christians cannot be forced to violate their conscience through compulsory participation in or even recognition of counterfeit gay weddings and marriages, ever, period. Sorry, we win, you lose. Sorry, guys. Sorry, LGBT activists. And this new makeup of the Supreme Court, even under Kennedy, that was effectively held to be true. Of course, there's nothing honest about five liberals on the court at the time. And as Chief Justice Roberts made the point in his dissent, that he expressed skepticism as to, at the time, the majority's position. He said, the majority graciously suggests that religious believers may continue to, quote, advocate and teach their views on marriage. He wrote at the time, the First Amendment guarantees, however, the freedom to exercise religion. Ominously, that is not a word the majority used. He said, when on hard questions arise, when people of faith exercise religion in ways that may be seen to conflict with the new right to same-sex marriage. Again, something that he said had absolutely nothing to do with the U.S. Constitution, with history, with tradition. It just was on a whim. Five black-robed autocrats created out of whole cloth this notion of same-sex marriage, took the age-old institution of marriage, basically trampled over it, redefined it in their own minds, because you can no more suspend what marriage is than you can suspend gravity. I mean, the high court might as well have said, we hold that gravity is unconstitutional. And folks, so you have every right to go jump off of a cliff now, and we hold that gravity is unconstitutional. They can no more do that than they could say, we hold that there is a right for a man to marry a man or a woman to marry a woman, something that inherently is contradictory to the word marriage itself. Marriage itself is, by definition, the union of a man and a woman. So, Roberts went on, when, for example, a religious college provides married student housing only to opposite-sex married couples, or a religious adoption agency declines to place children with same-sex married couples. Indeed, the Solicitor General, this is who argued for gay marriage at the time, the Solicitor General candidly acknowledged that the tax exemptions of some religious institutions would be in question if they oppose same-sex marriage. There is little doubt that these and similar questions will soon be before the court, and they will be before the court. They have not yet, many of these questions. So the answer, we don't have a full answer yet as to how this notion of same-sex marriage, something that is at disharmony with our religious liberties. The two can't, gay marriage and religious free exercise cannot coexist in harmony. They just cannot, because they are inherently at odds. And that was that's the whole design. As I've often said, they don't want the white picket fence. They want to burn down the white picket fence. That's what that's what this idea is. You know, you take in money and with commerce, you think about the dollar. If you take the dollar, if you introduce counterfeit money into commerce, what is the effect of that? It devalues the dollar, right? So when you introduce counterfeit marriage into society, it devalues the institution of marriage and necessarily puts those who support legitimate marriage, it puts them at odds with the government. So now the government has chosen sides against the biblical model of the biological, the scientific model of marriage as between a man and a woman. And so Christians necessarily are now effectively at odds with the law, and you will be made to care, right? That's what we have seen happen over and over again with these so-called civil rights star chambers around the country, like the one right here in Colorado. We're broadcasting from Colorado. The Colorado Civil Rights Commission, who were slapped down, thankfully, in the Masterpiece Cake decision. So there a lot remains to be seen, and I want folks, you know, listening right now in the LGBT community, first of all, we love you guys. It's nothing personal. It just, we just happen to, you know, you talk about your marriage equality. That's a euphemism. That's meaningless. It's nonsense. We happen to be rooted in marriage reality. Okay. So it's not personal. It's just reality. It's just a fact. Marriage is between a man and a woman. Your so-called notion, your notion of gay marriage, it's nonsense. And it was never about marriage equality. It remains, folks, a spiritual battle. It's camouflaged in the formal attire of judicial and public policy wrangling, but it's just spiritual. It's just warfare. And it's warfare that's going to play out in the high court. And it's spiritual warfare but let's put aside the spiritual aspect of it. Just from a constitutional standpoint, an originalist 5-4 court, and I think in short order we're gonna see a 6-3 court, because Justice Ginsburg, I don't imagine she's gonna be staying on the court. I mean, they may, you know, they'll try to prop her up and keep her there for as long as they possibly can, but she's 85, and God bless her, she's got struggles with pancreatic cancer, and we don't wish any ill on Justice Ginsburg, but she's probably going to be stepping down at some point, I believe, during maybe, if not this term, President Trump's second term. So the goal of these LGBT activists and these secular the progressives, it's long been, again, to pit the government directly against the free exercise of religion. That's it. They want to silence all dissent. And I think with Kavanaugh on the U.S. Supreme Court, because of his judicial philosophy as an originalist, as a textualist, I believe that we will get back to the harmony of religious liberty, our First Amendment enumerated guaranteed constitutional rights, trumping this false notion of so-called gay rights, this euphemistic notion, which is nothing more than an attack on free speech and religious liberty. Folks, Matt Barber in for Sandy Rios today. Apologize for the technical difficulties. Hopefully we'll get all that worked out so it doesn't happen again. but it has been a joy and a pleasure to join you today. Let's keep in prayer about this appointment of Justice Kavanaugh, and that when confirmed, and I believe he will be, that he will be that fifth and deciding vote to overturn the infamous Roe v. Wade decision. We'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.